Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back to Reclaiming the Republic. As we go through the ratification debates, one of the things that you have to understand is the consistency of how the Constitution was defined. It was defined as limited, that the federal government could not do anything that was not enumerated. The only way they could have any new powers was not to create a law to assume it. They had to have an amendment to the Constitution, which is why we go through all of the lengths of actually showing you that when they tried to create this Department of Transportation, we had three presidents veto their attempts in doing so. Well, until they actually convinced everybody and educated everybody that the federal government wrongly could assume these powers, that they could violate the Constitution, and we would be none the wiser because they convinced us that they didn't have to amend the Constitution anymore. Well, you can't redefine something that was clearly and legally defined. The ratification debates are legal terms and definitions. This is exactly how the states accepted this Constitution, was based on these terms. I am telling you, had they been told that the federal government, the court would be able to determine what would be constitutional, what wouldn't be constitutional, that they could actually create new law and new constitutional powers such as marriage. If it would have been put out that even though the Constitution does not have an enumerated power on marriage, but if it came to the court and the court actually assumed jurisdiction over marriage, that they would grant themselves this power and jurisdiction over marriage and dictate marriage. Because they would have, every single state would have rejected the Constitution based on that right there. There's no way the states would have allowed the general government and the federal court system to be able to have that kind of control. The whole concept was that the states were in control. This was their compact. And if the federal government wanted to create this new jurisdiction, they had to come to the states for the states to actually delegate to them. And until they did so, they couldn't do it. This is why under Coolidge, see, Coolidge understood this. I'm telling you, Coolidge was a progressive. He was really upset that the states didn't buy into delegating the power of labor to the federal government. He was the champion in 1926 of an amendment to the Constitution to grant the federal government the ability to regulate child labor, 18 years and under. Now, the states rejected that. Well, Coolidge accepted that fact. He wanted to see that. He was a big labor guy. He was huge on organized labor. Well, that tells you that he wasn't that conservative. But he understood the Constitution and the framework, and he knew that the federal government couldn't do it unless it was delegated. Well, there were previous presidents like Wilson, Teddy, and others before him and before them that actually assumed powers because they were kings. They didn't need to get the states to delegate the powers. They went ahead and exercised the powers because they felt it necessary. They bought off on this John Marshall redefining the Constitution. And that's what's happened. The court system redefined it to allow the federal government unconstitutionally to operate. And the fact is, the only way we're going to fix this, is getting the federal government back into the bottle, getting them back into the framework of the Constitution. And that process is called Republic Review. It is not nullification. Nullification is a separate process, and we're going to get into that. Republic Review is exactly what Madison prescribed. It is a level of interposition by the states to politically and morally, as well as, I'll keep the framework of politically. It politically forces them, because bottom line, what happens to a public servant if they fail to support the Constitution based on the 14th Amendment, Section 3. Well, Section 3 basically says if you fail to support it while you're under oath, then you're disqualified from being a public servant. Well, so we have the political force. You can no longer be a politician. You can no longer be a public servant if you do not support the Constitution. It's that simple. So we have all the teeth necessary, that along with treason. You know, you go far enough, like some of these representatives who are now demanding all sorts of lunacy, such as this supporting this invasion. Every single one of them is at risk of hanging by the neck till dead because they're risking treason. They're outright rebelling and insurrection against the Constitution. And if it can be proven at treason, but the nice thing is we don't have to go that far. We've already proven, based on the fact that they are not supporting the Constitution, Article 4 of the Constitution, Section 4 of the Constitution, you know, Article 4, Section 4, as well as Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15, they're violating the Constitution. They're directly supporting alternatives which are not constitutional. Therefore, they're supporting rebellion against the Constitution. Therefore, they no longer are eligible. They've disqualified themselves of minimum, disqualified themselves. Now, if we can go after them for treason, that'd be great. Because I truly believe once we have, you know, a wake of hanged politicians, then I think we'll actually start waking people up and going, wow, you know, we can hold these people accountable. But we have to first start holding them accountable. And it starts with you. When is it that you're going to be a part of the solution and no longer a part of the problem? Because if you're not involved in the solution, you are a part of the problem. It's kind of that simple. Anyway, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that provides you the academic evidence necessary to understand where we are and what we have as a constitution. And we give you the academic evidence-based solutions of what we have to do to get back to that framework of the constitution that we have. Our comment line is 425-270-5416. We welcome anybody. Please call. We don't want to necessarily, I know I've gone into a lot of asides, a lot. And so I don't want to necessarily go into any more asides. I will. And as we read along, I will, but I'm not going to go into these long orations. Now, when we departed yesterday, Governor Randolph was giving this long dissertation over a variety of things, but his focus was implications, that there are no such things as implications of powers. There are powers that are actually enumerated, and then there are some specific exclusions, or what we would call exceptions of what they can't do, or restrictions, actually. Let's not call them exceptions. These are restrictions that further clarify what they can't do, as it was stated on the, I'm trying to remember, what was it? It was, pull it up, I'm going to get to it real quick. It was the fifth clause of Article 9, or no, Article 1, Section 9, that no tax or duty shall be laid. So the federal government had the power to lay all these taxes, to do all of these things. But there shall be no duty laid on any articles exported from any state. So in other words, they were restricted in commerce that they couldn't get involved in taxing or creating any burdens regarding the commerce of states. Isn't that interesting? But they started creating burdens. Today, they're dictating how much water your toilet can flush. Where is that enumerated? It's not. These are all assumed powers. They're killing us with all of this unconstitutional government. And as we see us going down this path of creating these, what we'll call these vaccination passports, that is the same thing as a bill of attainder. They're making something illegal that you try to, you know, you try to get out there and be free and do something because you don't have a vaccination. They prove that you don't have a vaccination. You've committed a crime. No, that's a bill of attainder. Anywho, let's move on. And this is what Governor Randolph said. I'm going to read the last sentence. But let me ask the gentleman, where is his favorite rights are violated? They are not violated by the 10th section, which contains restrictions on the states. Now he's talking about the 10th section of Article 1. Are they violated by the enumerated powers? And then Governor Randolph read through the 8th and 12th articles of the Bill of Rights. Is there not provision made in this Constitution for the trial by jury in criminal cases? Does not the third article provide that the trial of all crimes shall be by jury and held where the said crime shall be, where they've been committed? In other words, they just can't be tried anywhere. They have to be in that local vicinage. Does it not follow the cause and nature of the accusation must be produced? Because otherwise they cannot proceed on the cause. Everyone knows that the witnesses must be brought before the jury or else the prisoner will be discharged. Let me ask you this. How many of you have actually paid a ticket for a movie violation that was done by a camera? Did you know you have a constitutional right to face your accuser, to have them bear witness against you? And guess what? You can't consider a camera an accuser, and you can't consider their image a testimony. You have a right. And so what we'll get into when we come back, because I don't want to get into a long dissertation, or I'll bump into the promos. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Now, as they go back through, and it's been provided as testimony regarding this whole trial by jury, vicinage, and all of these things, as they've already gone through, they really well spelt out. I think they presented it very well, that they were unable to provide a set standard. So, again, this being an enumerated constitution, if it is not listed, if the power is not delegated, then they can't meddle with it. Now, the argument was that, well, they do put it out there that if a trial of crime, you know, any crime trial that's going to be held, well, they kind of say that it's going to be, it has to be a trial by jury. It doesn't say that no other trial that, you know, can be held will not be trial by jury. It only says that trials of a criminal nature will be by jury. And so the anti-federalists, and as a matter of fact, I owe Tom Newellis, I think his handle is Samuel Adams. I need to give him a call today. I owe him a phone call because there's a lot of people that claim the anti-federalists were right when they weren't. The anti-federalists made these assertions based on violations of the Constitution. When one reads the ratification debates and how these federalists actually spelled out that this is how the Constitution, you know, defined that clause. And so if they didn't execute in accordance to the way it was defined, then it was a violation. And so when the anti-federalists came along and said, well, they're not going to do that, they're going to do this. Well, that in itself is an implication that they have violated the Constitution by not doing as it was described. Doesn't that make sense? I sure hope so. This isn't rocket science. If you do something that is, you know, not within the enumerated powers, if you're not following those things you're supposed to be doing, like, you know, arming, equipping, training the militia, then you are violating the Constitution. And, oh, by the way, the National Guard is not the militia, not as it was defined in Virginia. The militia goes down to counties, and counties have requisites for their membership. National Guard does not do that. National Guard is strictly at the state level. So how many people, how many counties in every state are not represented by anybody within their National Guard of the state? Huh. Well, then they're not abiding by the same defined principles of how a militia is to operate. Because a militia is to operate to help quell insurrections, to help suppress riots and those types of things, because that was the whole purpose of the militia for the state. But instead, the states have turned their backs on having a citizenry enforcement and have created professional enforcements. Well, you can't have both at the same time. You have to amend the Constitution or you're violating the Constitution in doing what you're doing. So even the states are violating the Constitution by not abiding by the militia and the militia's defined standards. Anyway, going on, Governor Randolph says, calling of evidence in his favor is coincident to his trial. There is no suspicion that less than 12 jurors will be thought sufficient. The only defect is that there is no speedy trial. Consider how this could have to be amended. We have heard complaints against it because it was supposed that the jury is to come from the state at large. It will be in the power to have jurors from the vicinage. And would not the complaints have been louder if they had appointed a federal court to be had in every county in the state? Criminals are brought in the state from every part of the country to the general court, and jurors from the vicinage are summoned to the trials. There can be no reason to prevent the general government from adopting a similar regulation. As to the exclusion of excessive bails and fines and cruel and unusual punishments, this would follow to, because he's really going through the British, remember, he went through the British Bill of Rights, and he's identifying the things that they don't even identify in this. This would follow itself without a Bill of Rights. Observations have been made without watchfulness over those in power, which deserve our attention. There must be a combination. We presume corruption in the House of Representatives, Senate, and President before we can suppose that excessive fines can be imposed or cruel punishments inflicted. Their number is the highest security. The numbers are the highest security in our own Constitution, which has attracted so many eulogiums from the gentlemen. Here we have launched into a sea of suspicions. How shall we cheek power? By their numbers? Before these cruel punishments can be inflicted, laws must be passed and judges must judge contrary to justice. This would excite universal discontent and the dissension of the members of government. They might involve their friends in the calamities resulting from it, and could be removed from office. I never desire a greater security than this, which I believe to be absolutely sufficient. And so later on, he goes on and he basically, because we're going to skip a lot of his, you know, dissertation here, and he goes into common law. And again, remember, common law was not defined by the Constitution. It was injected by the Bill of Rights. And by the 14th Amendment, common law was now imposed upon every state in the Union, because in the amendments of the Constitution, it talks about trials of common law and how they're to be done. I believe it is the 7th Amendment. Anyway, common law. But he objects that the common law is not established by the Constitution. The wisdom of the convention is displayed by its omission, because the common law ought to be immutably fixed. It is established in our own Constitution or the Bill of Rights, which has been resounded through the House. It is established only by an act of the legislature and can therefore be changed as circumstances may require it. Let the honorable gentleman consider that what would be the destructive consequence of its establishment in the Constitution. Even in England, where the firmest opposition has been made to the encroachments upon it, it has been frequently changed. What would have been our dilemma if it had been established? Virginia has declared that children shall have equal portions of the real estate intestates, that's what they're calling it. I've not used that word, but again, forgive me. Some of these words are a little bit odd. So intestate, they're intestate parents. Now, what is intestate? Unrepresented, voiceless, unheard, and so forth. So interesting. Virginia has declared that children shall have equal portions of the real estate of their intestate parents, And it is consistent with the principles of a republican government. The immutable establishment of the common law would have been repugnant to that regulation. It would, in many respects, be destructive to republican principles and productive of great inconveniences. I might indulge myself showing many parts of the common law which would have this effect. I hope I shall not be thought to speak ludicrously when I say the writ of burning heretics would have been revived by it. Now, they had laws in Europe of burning heretics. In France, if you could prove a person a heretic within the first 6 years after they die, you can actually dig them up and burn them in effigy. Anyway, it would tend to throw real property into few hands and prevent the introduction of many salutary regulations. Thus, were the common laws adopted in that system, it would destroy the principles of a republican government. But this is not excluded. It may be established by an act of legislature. Its defective parts may be altered and may be changed and modified as the conveniences of the public may require. Now, we're going to jump on down, because we're actually going to go past, because this was on Tuesday, June 17th. Now, Wednesday, June 8th, these were long. If you look at some of these dissertations and how many people spoke, these were long days. I mean, this was probably the hardest working delegation, because when you look at some of these other ones, you know, like the North Carolina, there wasn't as many, and the long dissertations, they must have taken breaks and must have had, you know, tea and crumpets or whatever they did for breaks back then. But anyway, we go on to the 18th, and almost towards the end, Mr. Henry then pipes up on common law and says, a treaty may be made giving away your rights and inflicting unusual punishments on its violators. Now, how is he making this assumption? If these things are not enumerated within the Constitution, they can't make a treaty. Remember, George Nicholas already said earlier that they can only make treaties that they have been empowered by the Constitution to do so. Anything else would be repugnant. So Anyway, he goes on and says that it may be inflicting unusual punishments on its violators. It is contended that if the King of Britain makes a treaty within the line of his prerogative, it is the law of the land. I agree that this is proper. And if I see the same checks in that paper, again, being disrespectful towards the Constitution, which I see in the British government, I would consent to it. Now, I'm going to stop there so that we don't, you know, meander into the promos. And when we come back, we'll play, or I'll read the last portion of what Mr. Henry's trying to allude to, and then Governor Randolph's response to this. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, now, so just remember, what Mr. Henry is bringing up is this concept of making treaties. Now, okay, so I'll kind of encapsulate what he is saying when I finish this last half of his little part. Can the English monarch make a treaty which shall subvert the common law of England and the Constitution? Dare he make a treaty that shall violate Magna Carta or the Bill of Rights? Dare he do anything derogatory to the honor or subversive to the great privileges of his people? No, sir. If he did, it would be nugatory, and the attempt would endanger his existence. Now, you got to keep in mind that the king has general powers, which means that the king can make almost any treaty he wants to. However, when a government has general powers, then you need a Bill of Rights. And in England's case, there is a Bill of Rights. And so the Bill of Rights protects the people from the king using his general powers to give away these protections that the Bill of Rights gives them. So he can't do it. In America, the government doesn't possess general powers. They possess enumerated powers, so that the government can only make treaties that are within their enumerated powers. Period. They can't make treaties regarding marriage. They can't make treaties regarding gender dysphoria. They can't make treaties like they're doing. They're giving away money and, you know, creating these agreements and so forth with these other countries. They can't make treaties regarding the environment. There's no enumerated power to do so. The money that they're strapping us with these carbon credits and everything else, that's all unconstitutional. Folks, what's it going to take? As we read through this, as we understand the Constitution and how defined it is, what's it going to take? I know this has been a long haul going through this, but I'm giving you just a pile of evidence so that you can become the academe in standing up in front of people and identifying every single Federalist that clearly defined the federal government as these defined enumerated powers and that they can't do things that they have no power to do. We're trying to give you the ability to become the voice, the articulant, in your state, in your area, regarding Republic Review and how well defined the federal government has been placed within this framework. Anyway, so Mr. Randolph, or Governor Randolph, then talks and answers what basically Mr. Henry had just stated. The Honorable Gentleman says that if you place treaties on the same footing here as they are in England, he will consent to the power because the king is restrained in making treaties. Will not the president and the Senate be restrained? Being creatures of that constitution, can they destroy it? Can any particular body instituted for a particular purpose destroy the existence of the society for whose benefits it was created? It is said there is no limitation of treaties. I defy the wisdom of that gentleman to show how they ought to be limited. When the Constitution marks out the powers to be exercised by the particular departments, I say no innovation can take place. An honorable gentleman says that this is the great character of America. If so, will not the last clause of the fourth article of the Constitution secure it against dismemberment? It provides that nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. And if this did not constitute security, it follows from the nature of civil association that no particular part shall sacrifice the whole. But I think Mr. Nicholas said it better. He said that they cannot make a treaty that is not within their enumerated powers. It would be repugnant to do so. Bottom line, they only have these powers to operate. You didn't give them a blank check. They do not have general powers where the king does. And Mr. Henry, being so desperate to stop the ratification of the Constitution, being so corrupt in trying to protect these powers that the states possess that is about to destroy the Union and destroy the liberties of what these men fought for in the Revolutionary War, because around the corner, France, England, and Spain become more hostile and ramp up their activities in their own corners. I am here to tell you, Mr. Henry was possessed, and he wasn't possessed in a good way. He was really trying his best in his character, in his tone, calling the Constitution that piece of paper, that paper there. Most people, as I look at what and how he talked and how he spoke, you could clearly see he was trying to bend things and trying to create an error that didn't exist within this Constitution. And it's unfortunate that he was a great man of the Revolution and had such, he was a lion of liberty, but he became a cougar of corruption, protecting his den of corruption. And it's unfortunate that that's how he ended his life. But most people don't see this. Most people can't see how he's created these facades in trying to attack this Constitution. And, you know, it bothers me when I hear people say, well, the Anti-Federalists were right. No, they weren't. I'm sorry, they weren't right. The Federalists were right, and the fact of the matter is the federal government has been violating the Constitution left and right. So, anyway, the next one, again, is now Mr. Henry, and he talks again a little bit about common law. And so he goes to say, I might go on in this discrimination, but it is too obvious that the security of territory is no security of individual safety. I ask, how are the rights, individual rights, and national rights secured? Not as in England, for the authority quoted from Blackstone would, if stated right, prove in 1,000 instances that if the King of England attempted to take away the rights of the individuals, the law would stand against him. No, the Bill of Rights, because the Bill of Rights have been laid down as, you got to remember, the Glorious Revolution. They fought a revolution to create these standards. Now, you got to remember that when Jefferson and Adams were there, they were already pointing out how they had been lackadaisical and how those Bill of Rights mean nothing to them anymore. I remember reading, I think it was in John, and no, it was in both John Adams and Thomas Jefferson's biographies, when they both talked about being at that crossroads where the war began, where that great glorious revolution began, how they were calling out the British for being hypocrites right there at that crossroads and telling them, you know, here you guys fought and you died to, you know, to institute these rights. And now look at these rights. And they started listing and saying, where is this right? Where is this right? Moving on, Mr. Henry says, the Acts of Parliament would stand in his way. The Bill and Declaration of Rights would be against him. The common law is fortified by the Bill of Rights. The rights of the people cannot be destroyed even by the paramount operation of the law of nations, as the case of the Russian ambassador evinces. If you look for a similar security in the paper on your table, you will look in vain. That paper is defective without such a declaration of rights. See, he keeps on thinking that he has to have a declaration of rights when what they have in front of them is an annuity. Look at it as Mr. Iredell puts it. When you look at a power of attorney, a general power of attorney requires a declaration of rights. However, if you have a power of attorney that is specified that you can only do this, this, and this, you don't need a declaration of rights because these are the only things they can do. If they do anything that is not within that, it is a violation and you can hold them accountable. Well, folks, they're running amok because they're violating it in every direction. And the way we hold them accountable is a republic review. Mr. Henry goes on and says, it is unbounded. He's talking about the Constitution without such restrictions. I mean, this is a fool's argument. He still does not understand an enumerated Constitution. If the Constitution be paramount, how are the constitutions and laws of the states to stand? Their operation will be totally controlled by it, for it is paramount to everything unless you show some guard against it. The right of persons are exposed as it stands now. Now, Mr. Henry then goes on and says, then contended that there was real responsibility in the British government and sufficient security arising from the common law, declaration of rights, and etc., whereas in this government there was no barrier to stop their mad career. He hoped to obtain the amendments which his honorable friend had proposed. He's talking about Mr. Mason. And so Mr. Pendleton, and I know Mr. James Madison responds, and he goes on, and I don't need to go on and on. The fact of the matter is the fact that Mr. Henry, this far into the debates, is still saying the exact same things without really proving that the enumeration of powers is insufficient. He's just constantly pointing to the King of England with general powers and the fact that the Declaration of Powers is what saves the British rights. They don't have enumerated powers. It is not analogous. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so now we're getting into some other insights, and this one is actually by Mr. Pendleton. And so the next clause, this is what he says, the next clause settles the original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, confining it to two cases, that of ambassadors, ministers, and consuls, and those in which a state shall be a party. It excludes its original jurisdiction in all other cases, but appears to me that it would not restrain Congress from regulating even those, so as to permit foreign ambassadors to sue in the inferior courts or even compel them to do so, where their causes may be trivial or they have no reason to expect a partial trial. Notwithstanding, this jurisdiction is given to the Supreme Court, yet Congress may go further by their laws so as to exclude its original jurisdiction by limiting the cases wherein it shall be exercised. They may require some satisfactory evidence that the party could not expect a fair trial in the inferior court. I am struck with this view from considering that the legislature is not included by the general jurisdiction in the Constitution from regulating it to accommodate and convince the people. Yet the legislature cannot extend its original jurisdiction, which is limited to these cases only. And so he then goes on and talks a little bit about common law as he starts setting up this jurisdiction. Let us consider the appellate jurisdiction in these words had been left out. The general jurisdiction must embrace decrees in chancery and admiralty and judgments in courts of common law. In the ordinary practice of this appellate jurisdiction, when there is an appeal from the inferior court of the court of chancery, the appellate jurisdiction goes to law and fact. Because the whole testimony appears in the record, the court proceeds to consider the circumstances of both law and fact blended together and then decrees according to equity. This must be unexceptionable to every body. How is it in appeals from admiralty? That court, except in some cases, proceeds as a court of chancery. In some cases, they have trials by jury, but in most cases, they proceed as in chancery. They consider all circumstances and determine as well what the fact as the law is when this goes to a superior court in its determined same way. Appeals from the common law courts involve the consideration of facts by the superior courts when there is a special verdict. They consider the facts and law together and decide accordingly, but they cannot introduce new testimony. When a jury proceeds to try a cause in an inferior court, a question may arise on the competency of a witness or some other testimony. The inferior court decides that question. It either admits or rejects the evidence. The party intending to object states the matter in a bill of exceptions. The jury then proceeds to try cause according to the judgment of the inferior court. And on an appeal, the superior court determines upon judgment of the inferior court. They do not touch the testimony. If they determine that the evidence was either improperly admitted or rejected, they set aside the judgment and send back the cause to be tried again by a jury in the same court. These are the only cases in the appeals from the inferior courts of common law, where the superior court can even consider facts incidentally. I feel the danger as much as any gentleman in this committee of carrying a party to the federal court to have a trial there. But it appears to me that it would not be the case if that be the practice which I have now stated, and that it is to be practiced must be admitted. The appeals may be limited to a certain sum. I make no doubt it will be so. You cannot prevent appeals without great inconveniences, but Congress can prevent that dreadful oppression which would enable many men to have a trial in the federal court, which is ruinous. There is a power which may be considered as a great security, the power of making what regulations and exceptions in appeals they may think proper so to be contrived as to render the appeals as to law and fact proper and perfectly inoffensive. How will this power be exercised? If I thought there was a possibility of danger, I should be alarmed. Now, it's kind of interesting because back in those days, how many people really understood courts and laws and so forth? The Constitution and getting into these types of details, one regarding, you know, how the different types of courts would handle and view information, whether that be a fact of law and so forth, or a blending of so. And so getting into these jurisdictions and differentiating between one court for an appeal and another court for a trial by common law and so forth, it's amazing how they talk about, you know, these different, and they understood the functions of the court. But the most important fact that I want to bring up, and I don't think it was really clear with this, but the common law and common law courts and common law grand juries are not prohibited, are not restricted, and as a matter of fact, common law is established in the Constitution. And so, well, the best way to do this, and that would be by going to the Bill of Rights and reading, and I'm pretty sure it is, it's the Seventh Amendment. And the Seventh Amendment says, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial by impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law and to be informed of the nature and cause of accusation. In other words, these are the things that you're entitled to. You're entitled to know, you know, what, you know, the cause of the crime is, the nature, the accusation, or the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against them, to have compulsory process obtaining witnesses in his favor. In other words, using the court to go and get people who know facts and make them testify. and to have the assistance of counsel for defense. But in the seventh, so this is the Sixth Amendment, and in the seventh, in suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in court of the United States, and then according to the rules of the common law. And so, what is common law, and what is these 20, what is the value of $20 then, and what is the value of $20 today? It doesn't matter. They actually put $20 in there. The question is, if you're actually being tried for a traffic crime and they're charging you $200 for a moving violation, doesn't that sound like you have a right to a trial by jury? Oh, well, they're just, no. These are just traffic violations. They're not, you know, common law. Well, actually, if it's law and these are accepted laws, I believe it does fall under common law. And you have a right to a trial by jury. This is something that I think the states have actually skirted, and the federal government has allowed them to do this. But the 14th Amendment actually holds the states to have to actually provide these protections, because no state shall make or create any law that shall abridge these privileges and immunities. So is it a law when there's, you know, saying that you violated something and you now have this fine, or you go to jail or something like that? Well, then if this is your due process, you have a right to to face your accusers. You have a right. So I'm going back to a comment I said probably in the previous episode, because I think it was a little while ago, where how many of you have actually been faced by, you know, a ticket by going through a red light, or by a speeding ticket that was done by a camera? Well, sure seems to me that when you get a trial with a judge, that's civil law. That's not common law. And that any case over $20 in cases of common law, and if common law is the law of the state, they can't invoke civil law over these types of cases. They can't create a blend. If you understand what I'm saying, the common law is the law of the state. It is the law of the land. And civil law is not. Anywho, and I'm just saying this because I happen to know somebody that actually had, and this kind of is highlighting for that person that, you know, you have a right to fight this. And as a matter of fact, I know in Murrieta and in places in California, believe it or not, they have successfully dismantled these traffic citations and enforcement by camera. They've dismantled these municipalities that were hoping to make money off of these camera systems, where they have proven that they've been unconstitutional. So anyway, back to common law and Mr. Mason. And let me see here. No, we don't have enough time. Believe it or not, we're actually out of time. We're getting closer to the end, though, and I know that may make a lot of you happy. When we get to the end, I've got a lot of information, personal information I want to give you, but when we get to the end, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.